I was so broke, I couldn't afford to keep pursuing music, like, without getting evicted.
Three-time Grammy winner, lead singer of One Republic.
He's written hits for some of the biggest names in the music industry.
Adele, Beyonce, Taylor Swift, Kelly Clarkson, Jonas Brothers, Ryan Tedder!
How many songs did you say that you had to write until you felt comfortable in the studio and then got your first placement?
I could tell you the first song I ever wrote, I was on the rim of the Grand Canyon on an Indian reservation.
Oh, that's crazy.
Making on a landline phone call.
Wow.
This close to quitting. I was at my wit's end. If you want to know this, the most scared I've ever been, it's actually on camera. Me and Pharrell performing on stage, saw who was in the audience. The front row went Beyonce, Jay-Z, Paul McCartney, Stevie Wonder, and I completely shit my pants. There's at least one day a week where I'm like, man, I don't need this. Like, screw it. Every time it's like, I want to walk away at least once a week.
Super exciting today because we have the one and only Ryan Tedder.
Ta-da!
Welcome back to Behind the Wall. What we're trying to do is we're trying to interview 100 singers, songwriters, and producers to help future music creatives, just creatives in general. But also I was thinking about this, and it's crazy to me that just 3 years ago, I was working a job I hated. I got laid off from that job. Made a couple videos, got really good at it, and somehow I am now interviewing one of the people I've always looked up to. So I just want to say this real quick. Don't be afraid to try stuff. Don't be afraid to do stuff.
Facts.
I don't think this would have ever happened if I didn't at least try and start and fail crap ton.
That's how I got started. One day I was in New York City, standing in Times Square. I was staring up at the TRL building when MTV was everything TRL. Thousands of girls outside, NSYNC was inside. I was there on spring break with a friend, sleeping in the basement of a church, and I stood outside and just kind of waited outside the door, and then I got asked to come up.
How old are you?
19. I got 20 maybe. I get asked to come up, and on the countdown, they asked me to announce the number one video, which happened to be Britney Spears' Hit Me Baby One More Time,
wow.
Replacing The Offspring. And I'm on camera on my favorite show in the middle of pop culture of the universe, which was Carson Daly and TRL, right? And I remember sitting in the stage going, no one knew that I could sing or write or anything. And I remember thinking, in the next 2 years, I want to be performing on this stage. And I think it was less than 18 months later, I entered a contest and I ended up getting flown to New York, performing on that stage, and won a record deal on TRL.
Incredible.
Yeah, so it was the same deal. I also was working a job I hated.
What job was it?
I love waiting tables, but I was waiting tables for working for a manager who was insufferable.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that'll do it.
It was make my life living hell on all of us. He was just not a happy person, and so he just threw it all at us. Yeah.
And that made you want to, like, I want to work for myself kind of thing, right?
Oh, yeah. That. Well, I knew that I was never going to, the last job I had was working at Pottery Barn.
Okay.
And they threatened to fire me. So, true story, I don't even think I've told the story before.
Exclusive.
Zoom. I was working at Pottery Barn in Nashville, making nothing. And shout out Pottery Barn. The contest that I entered, which took place at a Planet Hollywood, was happening like in a week. Uh-huh. And I had written an original song that I wanted to enter into it. And the performance conflicted with my work schedule. And so I asked one of the other employees to swap schedules with me on that day. They agreed to it. The floor manager found out, came back, and was like, hey, I hear I make the schedules for a reason. You can't just go switching that. I was like, yes, but my career, just so you know, I'm not trying to be a manager, no disrespect. My career isn't with Pottery Barn, it's music. And she goes, well, I don't know what to tell you, but you can't have that day off, so we had a problem.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, we do, I quit.
There you
and
go.
She's like, seriously? And I go, I quit. And I took the thing off and literally set it on a counter. I was like, I'll be by to pick up my check. And that was it.
Love it. I love when I first got laid off from my job, my friend said to me, he said, congratulations. And
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
I thought that was like super weird vibe to say at first, but he's like, I knew you were on something better now.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That's the way it works. Take the shot.
So for those who don't know, Ryan, lead singer of OneRepublic. It's too late to apologize. Also has written some of the biggest songs ever. And we're gonna let it burn. I'm a sucker for you. But I wanted to ask an important question, and that is, how many songs did you say that you had to write until you felt comfortable in the studio and then got your first placement?
Okay, yeah. It's a good question. I could tell you the first song I ever wrote, I was 15. And then, but I really didn't become remotely, I would say, listenable until I was 17. And I would skip class at college, and I wasn't a music major, I was business and advertising, and I would skip classes that I didn't like and go to the piano rooms in the music department. And I would tape the window with paper so nobody could see that I was in there, because you weren't allowed in there if you weren't in music. And I would write consistently, I'd say 4 or 5 days a week, and on the weekends I'd go in there for 5-6 hours. I probably wrote, and all I was doing was trying to write what sounded like songs that were on the radio. Because this is the 1999, right? This is 99, 2000.
I ain't worried.
So this is like, pop radio is everything. Top 40 radio is everything. We don't have streaming services or any of that stuff.
Sure.
So I'm hearing what's in the top 40, and I'm trying to write those hit records, you know. And at the time, it was a lot of pop music. Mm-hmm. You know, it was everything from like NSYNC and Backstreet, they were dominating everything, to like, the Cranberries, that's predates it a little bit. But what's the name of them? They're from Sweden, the Cardigans. Okay, there you go.
Okay.
That was gonna kill me. The Cardigans. Okay. So music at the time was light and pop, and ballads were crushing too. So I'm sitting in here trying to write all this stuff. I'm listening to Diane Warren's songs, other big songwriters, mm-hmm. David Foster songs, Babyface, and I'm deconstructing them. I'm like listening to them, learning the chord sequence, mm-hmm. then like turn the music off. I would memorize the chords, and then I would write new melodies and lyrics over it. They were trash, absolute trash. Every song I did was so cheesy in my mind now, like nothing I would write now. But you could tell that like there was like the possibility of something good coming from it, right? Anybody who would hear it would be like, yo, you could do this for a living, you know, but there's other friends in college and my mom. So like, I just kept doing it, but I wasn't really telling anybody. I was very reluctant to show anybody, because I was obsessed with the idea that I didn't want to be embarrassed. And the first time I ever performed anything or publicly played a song for anybody, I wanted it to sound like what was on the radio. So I did my like 10,000 hours or 20,000 hours cloaked in darkness, like cut off from the world, because I didn't have the balls to suck in public. That's really the truth. And I would say that I probably wrote somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 songs, which isn't really that much, but probably 100 songs before I got my first placement. And it took me, I don't count, the time that I was in college, I wasn't pursuing a professional career at that time, mm-hmm. so I don't count that. But from the moment that I graduated, I moved to New York City 2 weeks later and was pursuing music. and then Nashville. And it took me, I'll tell you, 2 years after college, I think that's right, my first cut was that I remember. My first cut that I remember was Bubba Sparks. It's called She Tried. And I'm actually, nobody, it's funny, very few people have caught this, but I'm actually singing the chorus with a country accent. She tried to tell me. And it's the first song that I'm actually featured on too. So, and
it's crazy.
Yeah, I don't even know if they credit me, but like I'm the one singing it and I wrote it. And that was my first cut. And that paid for me, that song, I made like $7,500, which is very specific, but I remember getting a check for $7,500 for singing on it. And I used that to move to Los Angeles. And
crazy.
2003. So there you have it. Yeah, that was exactly 2 years from the time that I started pursuing it.
Amazing. And then all along comes Bleeding Love. And Apologize. It's too late to
apologize. Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah, that was a wild year. Yeah.
But before that, was there any like traction? Was there any like, people calling and everything like that?
Yeah. So before that, so if you cut to 2003, I moved to LA. And by, see here, February of 04, so what is that, 8 months or whatever, 6 months, I was flat broke. I was getting eviction notices from my landlord, and I was a PA on the set of music videos and television commercials. So I was doing Chevy commercials in the Grand Canyon. I was doing like, I'm trying to remember, I did like, what's that guy who did, Twista? Make You Celebrity overnight.
Yeah.
Like I did a music video with him. I did a Microsoft Xbox commercial. Like I was just a PA because I needed the money. And then I sold my first beat. I was producing mostly hip hop at the time.
Okay.
But I had spent 2 years. Timbaland saw me on that MTV show, tracked me down a year later, and in 2002 signed me to a production deal with him.
Interesting.
From 02 to 04, I was based out of Nashville, Miami, New York, wherever Timbaland was, that's where I was. I was with him the day he made Cry Me a River. He played me the record right after it was finished.
Do you know it was a smash when you heard it?
Instant. And the problem with Cry Me a River is it was so transformative, it didn't sound like anything else.
Yeah.
So it's not only was I sure that it was a hit, I was so jealous of every aspect of it. I was like, I want to do songs like this. Like I was so obsessed. I was with him, I was texting with Missy Elliott two nights ago, and I reminded her, I was like, I was in the room when you made Under Construction. Give me all your numbers so I can phone ya. I was the like skinny white kid in the corner. I was the only white person in the room in the corner, just sitting here, not on my phone, because guess what? There was no TikTok or social media. So you would, back in the day, when you had to kill time, you literally sat there. You know what the entertainment was? Literally, can I count the light sockets in the room? Okay, I've done it, or I'm gonna count them again. Like you had nothing but time. And so I watched Timbaland do that stuff for 2 years and got to LA, and then this artist named Kylie Dean, who was signed to Tim's label. Mm-hmm. I wrote a song called Don't Wanna Be Alone, and I sold the beat. At the time, it was like, literally I was making beats. And then they would ask me, yo, can you write a hook on it? Sure, so I'd write the chorus too. And this one I wrote, produced 100% of this record, and Interscope calls my manager and says, we'll give him 10 grand right now and 10 when the record's mixed. And I was on the rim of the Grand Canyon on an Indian reservation.
Oh, that's crazy.
Making on a landline phone call.
Wow.
With my manager, like this close to quitting. I was at my wit's end. I was so broke, I couldn't afford to keep pursuing music, like without getting evicted. And that day, it was the last day I was on this commercial shoot, and he calls me, he's like, I got 10 grand coming to you next week. And that's the moment that my whole life changed. And
amazing.
And then I parlayed that into, I did a record for Tattoo. All the things she said, all the things. So I did the B-side to that song.
Wow.
And it went platinum. So then that was another little, okay, I got some money now. I'm paying for One Republic rehearsals. I'm buying gear for the band, putting it on my credit card, and like, and funding One Republic during the night, selling beats, making beats and selling songs during the day. And I knew one person at one record label, which was Interscope. I walked into Interscope and then basically went around the label just introducing myself to everybody and trying to get as many contacts as I could. And then after that song, I started doing, I did Step Up, the first, you know, the Step Up, the movie franchise.
Yeah, yeah.
I did half the music in the first movie. So that was a big, I did tracks with the Youngbloods out of Atlanta and a bunch of other records. And then I did like Cheaper by the Dozen. I did music for that. And I was just doing TV and film placements to like keep the lights on. And then out of nowhere, I landed J-Lo's first single. 2006, first half of 2006, Do It Well. Do it, do it, you do it, do it, you're doing it well. And I wrote and produced 100% of it. That same month, I landed Natasha Bedingfield, Love Like This with Sean Kingston.
Crazy.
And so I had those two singles come out in 2006, and then immediately followed by Bleeding Love. Keep bleeding love. And immediately followed by Apologize. And then immediately followed by Stop and Stare. And then Halo. Halo. And it was like, at that point, it just became like a waterfall. But it was a lot of just nickel and diming. I would take any session, I would, Halo, I mean, I'm leaving out a bunch of other songs like Hilary Duff and I'm spacing on her name from High School Musical. But like, anyway, there's a lot of singles that came out that weren't as big. But all of them kept me, like, gave me just enough income to keep doing what I was doing.
And what's incredible is so much has happened since then. So many songs have happened, yeah. So much incredible songs that you've collabed on, produced, executive produced, and now we're at this point with like a new generation of music, new technology, new things happening. And one of the songs that's killing it for you guys is I Ain't Worried. But I ain't worried about
it right now. Yeah.
I would love to hear about how that song came about.
Yeah, I Ain't Worried is crazy. How like, it took me by surprise, you know, catching a hit in 2022 is 10 times harder than 2007, 2008, 2012, 2016.
Because there's so much more like competition. And
75,000 songs a day uploaded to Spotify.
And that's just Spotify.
That's just Spotify.
That's insane.
TikTok, 99% of all hits now are generated or reinforced by TikTok. If it doesn't go viral in a video, so it's not just about writing the biggest song or the best song, right? That doesn't equal a hit anymore. So all my years of like writing and networking and expertise and stacking the room with the best writers on earth means nothing if the song doesn't go off on TikTok. And so that's a whole new dynamic that's entered into the equation.
Crazy.
So, you know, for me, to be like full disclosure, I have to write 5 to 6 times as many songs now as I did 5 years ago to have probably 1/3 to 1/2 the success that I had 5 years ago. And I'm better now than I was 5 years ago. So that's the most frustrating part.
A lot more people in the rooms
A lot more people in the rooms too. Like if you look at some of my biggest hits, I owned 100% of them.
Yeah.
Or 65%, you know, or 89, 90%. And that's next to impossible now. With One Republic, I could still put out a song that I did and it would be fine. Or if I do a solo thing, whatever. But the average hit has 5 writers on it now.
For sure. Especially with streaming today.
With streaming.
Completely different.
Yeah, completely different.
And everything.
Yeah, you know, the good news is if you catch a hit on radio now, they will play it twice as much as they played it. To give you an example, Apologize, when it broke the record for the most streams in 1 week in U.S. history. And then Bleeding Love broke that record like 2 months later.
Crazy.
When it broke it, it was 10,993, spins, radio spins. It got played 10,993 times in 1 week. That was the all-time record. Lizzo, About Damn Time, 19,000 spins in 1 week. It's about
damn time. On the radio?
On the radio.
Wow.
And that's still the way you make most of our money, because streaming doesn't still pay enough for writers, so radio is still like the end game, which is funny because most people don't sit around discovering new music anymore. Radio is not a place you go to discover new music.
For sure.
But it pays 1,000 times more than streaming or sales. So
is that from performance royalties?
Performance royalties. So all of us are sitting around chasing that elusive radio hit. And the other thing is like the top five songs of all time at U.S. radio that stayed in the top 10 for the longest amount of weeks all came out in the last 2 years.
Wow.
That's What I Want, Lil Nas X, my song, is number 4. Most 33 weeks in the top 10. Number one is Stay by
Sam
Smith? No, Stay by
Kid Leroy
and Bieber. That has that was 40 weeks at number 40 weeks inside the top 10, and then behind that is Blinding Lights, 39 weeks, and then behind that is Circles, Post Malone.
Wow.
36 weeks, or 34 weeks, and then we're 33 weeks. And so if you catch a hit now, it theoretically, you will do much better. Like, financially, you'll make more now than you would 5 years ago because radio's just churning these things over and over and over again. Because once they catch a real one, they don't want to let go of it. It's also way harder get to number one or in the top five now than it's ever been. So I ain't worried, for me, is like a unicorn. It's like, for us, for One Republic. The cool thing too about, there's a lot of downsides, you know, with TikTok now influencing the music industry so hard, it's so much harder to get a hit, right? The upside is there's no more ageism. Ageism is gone, doesn't exist.
Interesting.
And when I started, man, the moment you turned 30, a clock started ticking in terms of like top 40 relevance, pop relevance.
Okay.
And now you look at the musical landscape, the biggest DJ in the world is 53 years old, Tiësto.
Did not know he was 53.
Yeah.
And ABBA's coming back, and like ABBA's Fleetwood Mac. Yeah.
Elton John has just had one of the biggest hits of his life with Dua Lipa.
Cold Heart.
Yeah. Crazy. With the Now version. And then you look at
I did not know it was called Now. That's funny. I always pronounce it PN.
No, I think they're pronounced Now. And clever way of spelling Now. And then you look at Kate Bush.
Running up that hill. That's 100% her.
That's 100% her.
That's crazy.
Oh yeah, she's gonna have a good day at the office.
100%.
Yeah, she's. But anyway, the point being, the plus and the minus of social media steering music now is it is way harder. Everybody's guessing. If you think you know which song is the hit, you're wrong. 99% of the time, your ears will deceive you because it's not just about the. It's not about
the best song anymore.
That's the truth. It still needs to be a good song
for sure
to go all the way, but it's not about the best song anymore, if that makes sense. And, you know, obviously social media is now critical. So for I Ain't Worried, I said it before, but like, I love the song. Do I think it would have connected had it not gone off on TikTok? Probably not. Not in the way that it has now. Miles Teller's abs, shirtless Miles Teller doing this.
That's what went viral. Right?
I'm actually sending his abs a bottle of Dom Perignon. I already bought a bottle of champagne for his abs.
Amazing.
Yeah. I can't wait. I can't wait for him to pop that cork.
I wanted to gift your abs a bottle of champagne.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for everything you've done for One Republic and I Ain't Worried. I appreciate it.
As a spokesperson for his abs, we're so appreciative. We never thought this moment would come, but we're so excited to share this moment together.
You know what? It's a moment that I'm never going to forget.
Cuties.
One of the big pluses for social media for me is actually like how this all happened, and that was because of the video that I made about you.
Yeah. I don't know if you've heard one of the biggest songwriters in the world.
I would love to hear your side of it, because I know mine.
Yeah, my side of it is someone that we know mutually, who owns a Bev canned wine company, Alix Peabody. She randomly texted me and was like, have you seen this video? It's going off on TikTok, and you're in it. And she knew you. And I clicked on it and watched it, and I was like, oh, I'm getting trolled.
Let's just say Ryan makes very interesting TikToks. What is this? What is this? It kind of makes TikToks like a dad. And what I mean by that is, like, for example.
Hey, y'all, back on TikTok.
I was like, but it's actually kind of cool, like in a good way.
But this is the actual Ryan Tedder, and he only has 3,000 followers.
So I thought, how funny would it be if we just blew up Ryan's TikTok account and he has no idea why? So I'm gonna tag Ryan in the comments.
And if you could go to his profile
and follow, like his content, or comment on it, I know we can make Ryan the next big TikToker.
I was like, that's wild, crazy. And I didn't think anything of it. And then that night, I opened up my TikTok. I think I had 3,900, 3,500 followers.
3,800.
There you go, 3,800 followers.
I have a screenshot still.
I kept telling myself every day, Ryan, it's time to get active on TikTok. You like, stop. You know it's, I use TikTok to like find other talent, find other artists, find writers, that type of thing. But I wasn't using it as an artist, which was idiotic. And
One Republic was,
yeah. But I have more followers, like almost twice as many as they do now, thanks to you. But yeah, we're using, One Republic's using it. Long story short, that night I go on and I was actually right over there and I'm looking at it and I go, or I was downstairs and I go, I have 68,000 followers.
I have not been really using TikTok like I should. And somehow overnight I have 68,000 followers that came out of nowhere. Trying to figure that out.
And I was going, I just kept going, this is impossible. And I'm looking down, I'm going, I know I didn't have more than 4,000 like this morning. What in the hell is going on? That night I go to bed, I wake up and I had 170,000 followers.
Insane.
Then it went 270 and it just kept going. And I—
now it's almost at 900,000.
Yeah, I'm just, yeah, I'll probably hit 900 by the weekend. Like, it's crazy.
Insane.
It's insane.
I made that video simply because I had this idea that was basically, I'm trying to shine a light on a lot of people that are behind the scenes for music. Yeah. Be able to show people a different side of the entertainment industry. And what was funny to me was, you're someone that I have a vision board of people like Jimmy Iovine's on it, Timbaland's on it, Chris Martin's on it, you're also on it. People that I aspire like to have a like success similar to with like business and everything that you got going on. And I just thought it was super interesting that you're this incredibly talented guy that's posting these kinds of videos. Yeah. It was almost funny to do it. And Justin Tranter, when we were talking, said something super funny. He was like,
"Say you, in such like a positive way, roasting Ryan Tedder's TikTok was maybe the best thing I've seen all year. Because not only, because it was so sweet, but still accurate."
That was one of my favorite videos.
And he loved it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's obviously a fucking genius. I mean, if you write Halo.
And it was, I'm so glad that it worked out because I wasn't expecting it to do well. Yeah. All of a sudden, I see you, in 2 minutes, you go from 3,000 followers to 6,000. I'm like, this is going to explode.
Justin's hilarious.
Justin, actually, I got a question.
Okay, great.
A question from Justin would be, which song do you think is Justin's favorite that you wrote?
That's What I Want, Lil Nas X.
Older one.
Okay.
By Beyonce. That's a hint.
Halo. XO.
My favorite Tedder song is actually Beyonce XO. Which is an underrated masterpiece.
Yeah, there XO. It is. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I love XO. Yeah, I actually have the original demo of it. I may release. I love when
artists release demos.
I think I'm gonna release my demo of it. I may put it on our next album. I got to figure out clearances and stuff like that, but it sounds wildly different from her version, so yeah, that's awesome though.
One of the things
my favorite, well, it's probably too late because you've already interviewed him. But I was gonna say I don't think he could guess my favorite song that he's ever written.
What is it?
It's Lose You to Love Me. Selena. That's Monster Smash. Monster. What a record.
Favorite song by her.
What a record. Yeah.
Brilliant. I'm gonna write this down.
Yeah, that's a. There are songs that you have come out, or that you hear. Sometimes you're lucky enough to write them that make other writers like wish they had been in the room. You know what I mean? That's one of those. I was like, oh man, I wish I would have loved to have written that song. You know, that's like Gautier, somebody I used to know. That to me is like
one of the best songs ever.
One of the best songs ever written. Yeah, ever. I wish I wrote that, and I wish I wrote Locked Out of Heaven.
Also incredible song.
Which is also, by the way, biting somebody I used to know just a little bit. Watch. Didn't used to call me up, so you make it feel like. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a video right there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to start a lawsuit or anything. Lord knows I don't need that heat.
Well, so one of the things that I'm trying to do is show the music industry in a new and cool way. So I'm gonna.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice Bone-In Tender Ribeye Steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Show you this video, because then it's going to lead into something else.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the biggest band of today.
Because I got to meet and interview them.
And I asked them the scariest question of my entire life.
How many likes will this video have to get in order to sing on stage with you guys?
But why is that? This is something I thought I'd never talk about on camera. You see, I was born with a medical condition that affected my life every day of my life. I wasn't able to do what everyone else could do. A lot of my childhood was spent in and out of hospitals. But the one thing that was able to help me get through it was music. And the band that helped me the most was Coldplay. This music connected with me in a way nothing else did. And I used to spend hours learning their songs, playing piano, pretending like I was on stage. And then I turned 14, while other kids wanted to be NBA players, I wanted to sing on stage with Coldplay. So I made a note, and I said if this ever happened, I would give it to Coldplay on stage. So what are we gonna do? We're gonna ask Coldplay the scariest question of my entire life. But here's the thing, I'm actually super afraid to ask this question. But I know if I don't, I would be letting down that young kid who wasn't afraid to fail. You see, this isn't just about singing on stage. It's about showing myself and everyone else that fear doesn't have to stop you. So why not go?
Your music was some of the music that helped bring inspiration to me, and it inspired me to create art. So I wanted to say, first of all, thank you so much for that opportunity.
Oh, thank you, man. It goes both ways.
I had this dream. So a long time ago, I made a note and I wrote it on a piece of paper when I was like 14. And I wrote, I will sing on stage with Coldplay at some point in my life.
Okay.
So this is something that they do on TikTok. How many likes will this video have to get in order to sing on stage with you guys for like 30 seconds or even 10 seconds?
So what, give me an amount of like, I don't know about how many likes.
On average,
you
can be.
This is great.
You can say
Chris
as,
is so nice.
As you want.
For you to sing on stage.
Yeah.
Which song?
The Scientist.
Oh, that's tough, man.
Or Fix You, or any woman, honestly.
Does it have to be today?
No.
Okay. I'm gonna say 100,000.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's do it.
And then we'll do it on the C stage. We'll make it work.
Incredible.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Hold me to that. You should hold me to that. Yeah.
That's great.
So
that's amazing.
As someone who has been performing all of your life, and someone who's never sang in a stadium, someone who's never used in-ears, I wanted to ask, what piece of advice do you have going into that? And that's going to be happening.
That's incredible. I love that he's like, how many likes is enough likes, man? I don't know. You tell me. It's pick a high number. I would say my advice is, because stage fright is what made me a great songwriter, because I knew that I could sing, but I was too afraid to do it in front of people.
I did not know that.
And I was in musical theater and acting and stuff before I was really a songwriter. So I was terrified of performing in front of people, even though I knew that I could very likely outsing, like I could outsing anybody in my choir, and I was like, I should be the one singing, but I was also at the same time afraid to do it. And the thing that got me over that, you know, countless performances live, and nothing's more terrifying than doing the Today Show at 6 a.m. on live television, muscle memory. So whatever the song is, over practice it so that when the fear kicks in, because it will kick in, your muscle memory kicks in, your body takes over, and your brain can be absent. You literally, even if you're not there, you're still hitting those notes. And if you want to know this, the most scared I've ever been, it's actually on camera. It's a tie. One is the TRL performance, the freelance talent search, but the most intimate, and I don't get nervous anymore. Stadiums, arenas, like
in front of camera,
festivals, cameras, what have you. I don't get nerves. Anyway, just testing. But what I'll tell you, I did a performance with Pharrell.
Ladies and gentlemen, Pharrell Williams and Ryan Tedder.
Stevie Wonder, Music Cares. It was the Grammy, every year, salute to Stevie Wonder. It was a salute to Stevie Wonder probably five or six years ago, I think. and we did Don't You Worry About a Thing.
Don't you worry about a thing, mama.
Me and Pharrell performing on stage, the front row went Beyonce, Jay-Z, Paul McCartney, Stevie Wonder, his entire extended family, the Obamas. That was the front row. I didn't consider that I would be able to see everybody so clearly. And I've been performing for years at this point. This is probably 2016, 2017. And this is the hardest Stevie Wonder song there is to sing. Mm-hmm. It is insane. And so I practiced it for 7 days straight. And on the day of the performance, I sat in the car and literally kicked everyone out. And I sat in the car and for 90 minutes, I sang it over and over and over and over. And then I got on stage and saw who was in the audience and I completely shit my pants. Like, not literally, but like I mentally shit my pants. I've never been so scared in my life. And I've got Pharrell, who's a dear friend of mine who I don't want to let down. And when I got on stage, my brain shut off completely because I was racked with nerves. And then all of those rehearsals, like going over and over, I went into autopilot, and it's one of probably the best TV performance I've ever done.
Don't you worry about a thing. Don't you worry about a thing.
If you watch it, you would have no idea. It's just type in Ryan Tedder, Pharrell Williams in YouTube, and it'll sit Stevie Wonder, and it'll pull up. I'm singing my ass off. I hit every note. I still don't know how I did it because I was terrified. Yeah, and Beyonce gave me like a, you know, it was crazy.
So speaking of all that, over the next year, I'm trying to show behind the scenes of the music industry in a really cool and fun way.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've always wanted to show is behind the scenes of creating a song.
Mm.
So to bring that to here, how many likes to write a song with you and then show the behind the scenes of how it was done?
How many likes is a good amount of likes? I don't know.
What, give me an amount of likes. I don't know about how many likes.
On average, I...
Now I'm on the spot because like I feel like I can't say what he said because that's aiming too high because I'm not as big as Chris Martin or Coldplay. So I feel like I've got to get 75,000 likes.
Incredible.
Is that achievable? I don't know. We'll see.
Let's find out.
Let's find out.
Let's do it.
All right.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
A question that I was also trying to understand, you do a lot, and then from the Chainsmokers, they asked this too, and we kind of had the same question. Alex asked this specifically.
Yeah.
How do you balance your life with family, work, and time and everything? Because you just do so much.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes not well is the answer, but I like think when I'm balancing it well, I multitask a lot and I don't spend a lot of time. I don't really have a social life. So that's a big part. That's not totally true. My social life is if I'm going to dinner with my wife and friends, right? I try to not work late more than one day a week. You just have an artist session sometimes, they go late and it is what it is. I don't really go out. I'm not a, you know, I've gone out enough time for 10 lifetimes. So when you remove just like the casual hangs and casual phone conversations, like when I work out, you know, which I know Alex and Drew are big on fitness and stuff, I'm running through wherever, right? On a treadmill, wherever, and I'm taking my phone calls that I need to do for that day that are non-music related. It also helps with your like if you're running and controlling your breathing. So I'm like literally knocking out 3 phone calls on my run. And the people that I talk with that are all the business side of my life, they know that that's what I'm doing. If I'm driving, I'm killing a call because I don't want to do it at home. I still try to get home every day around between 6 and 7, which I think is a reasonable time. I waste so little time. I think that's the best way to put it. I waste so little time. I have a team of people around me. I've got enough writers in my publishing company. So yeah, I would say how do I balance it is sometimes not well, most of the time pretty good. Mm-hmm. I'm always striving to balance it like as best as possible. And I'm taking way more vacations. So now, like, I genuinely, that was my biggest, you know, I burned out at the end of 2016 and in early 17 completely. We didn't promote Oh My My, I didn't tour it. I was so spent that, you know, I functionally removed myself from the music industry for probably half a year and questioned if I was gonna go back into songwriting because I was so absolutely burnt with all of it, you know? Because even at this stage in my career, it's 95% disappointment, 5%, you know, 5% like not disappointment.
Is that how it's always been too?
It's way more, no. Artists have so much more, all right, this is the best way for me to put this. Up until the last 3 years, people such as myself, other, you know, longer term big songwriter producers, okay, we would get called in the 11th hour on huge pop artists weekly. Like, the album's pretty much done. Can you come in and beat everything or write the single? Like, and literally that's what I did. And that's what we did, right? The meaning of the community. And there were gatekeepers and levers like to get songs to become hits, right? Yeah. It was very much the best song wins. But at that time, if somebody told you that you had the third single on an album, you had the third single. The CD comes out, or it goes to iTunes, right? Or streaming. Social media isn't influencing single selection at this point, back in 2016, 2017. And so if I had the fifth single on a Maroon 5 album, like Love Somebody. I really wanna love somebody. That was the fifth single.
That was played so much.
That got played so much. It's crazy. Another little insider tip, pro tip. You want the first single or the last single?
Still. Okay.
Because whatever, and now if you get a song like Stay, or Heat Waves, you can't switch singles for 9 months to a year.
Dang.
9 months to a year. You know, Enemy. Imagine Dragons, Justin Tranter's song. Great record. That song, I was with Dan Reynolds at the EMAs in Budapest the week that song blew up. They stayed on that. They did not switch singles or release Bones. We're on the same label, so I know the release is happening for 6 or 7 months later.
Crazy.
So you don't want to get caught in the middle as a writer because the first single is going to get the biggest push from the label. The last single is going to get the longest uninterrupted runway at radio and streaming. Mm-hmm. So for instance, I'm like beyond grateful that that's what I want. My Lil Nas X record is number 4 of all time in the top 10 at radio because it was the last single. If that had come before,
interesting.
If that had come after Montero, if it had gone Montero, that's what I want into the Jack Harlow record. I forget the name of that. What's the big one? Dun, 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 dun. Like
Industry
Baby. Okay, so it watch this. If it had gone Montero, That's What I Want, Industry Baby, the label would have had to shift the levers on my single and say, all right, we need you to focus on Industry Baby now. And that would have been the song that would have been most likely, okay, you know, sitting in the top 10 for, you know, months and months and months and months. Same with Maroon 5, Love Somebody. Love Somebody. Same with Kelly Clarkson, Already Gone. I could go like on my, I've had a run of last single positions that have been an absolute godsend. Like you want, your ego wants the first single, your bank account wants the last single.
Smart. Okay.
Yeah, two different things. But yeah, it's just a lot harder.
Sure.
It's so much harder right now. So I was lucky enough, I busted my ass early on, but I had success fairly quickly.
For sure.
And hustled. But I would say the music industry prior to the last 3 years was, once an artist or a label made a decision on a song, they wouldn't pivot, or it was very difficult to change your mind. Now, Monday they tell you you have the first single, Tuesday the song's not on the album. I had that happen with 3 artists in the last 4 months where I had the next single and everyone thought it was a smash, and then magically the phone's like, all of a sudden I don't hear anything. I'm like, what's going on? Oh yeah, it's not coming out. By the way, she's probably not even gonna use it.
Wow.
All the time. It happens so much that there's at least one day a week where I'm like, man, I don't need this. Like, screw that. Every time it's like, I want to walk away at least once a week at this stage of my career. Even with this success, I'm like, I want to at least one day a week.
But you still love it.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's like trying, it's like, I've never done cocaine, but I imagine that quitting it's pretty hard if you love it. Quitting cigarettes, right? Yeah. Most people that quit cigarettes, you ask them, like, do you miss it? Yes, I do. You know, that's the, it's like what it is. It's my, it's the nicotine. So, yeah.
Speaking of doing so much, you are going on tour soon.
Yeah.
I bought tickets to the Phoenix show.
Amazing.
And what, for what we did with Coldplay, would love to continue this and get like,
yeah,
if
for
you
sure.
guys are open to yeah. that, doing like behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And
it'll be 120 stuff. Degrees, but yeah.
That's true.
They have AC on that stage, though. They just don't turn it on until the showtime, so it'll be hot, but yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
One of the things we're trying to do is we're trying to help out anyone with a dream, anyone who wants to be a songwriter, anyone who is coming into this industry. What is a piece of advice you have for anyone out there who wants to
yeah.
not do the normal 9-to-5 thing?
Effort and work beats out talent 100% of the time. And that is... the best piece of advice I can give is don't talk about it. Don't talk about it, do it. Like, when anytime somebody's talking about how they're doing this and doing that, it means they're probably not putting in the actual hours. It's like, you have to do it. The most talented person in the room rarely is the one that wins. It's that simple. So,
boom.
Yeah, boom.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.